You're listening to a podcast from the Rocking Vicar.
Coming up in the first parish council of 2015, Christmas card etiquette. People who were famous for 15 minutes in 2014, the Britain of the Year, the happiest country in the world, where can that be? And we review Charlie Brooker's 2014 wipe.
Hello everybody, and Happy New Year to you, and welcome back to the Parish Council in 2015. It's the podcast from the Rocking Vicar. I'm Magnus Shaw, and like his socks, nothing changes on New Year's Day. It's Terence Stackham.
Hello, Magnus Shaw.
Hello.
Hello there, yes. Festive, you know, greetings to you.
Thank you, yes.
At this time. And speaking of that, I just want to check something with you. Normally, it's quite bad form to ask such a question, but it is relevant.
Okay.
Okay. Did you happen to receive the lovely handwritten and signed Christmas card I sent to you and Mrs. the Magnus Shaw?
Yes, I recognised them from the pound shop, yeah.
What do you say? It's good that you received my beautifully, by the way, hand selected from Fortnum and Mason Christmas card. Uh-huh. But let's just reflect. I think it's worth. This is time for putting the season for reflection. Let's reflect on your Christmas card to me.
Please.
Yes. It was an e-card.
It was.
Which, of course, is very convenient for the sender in that it's entirely without cost, or some might say without effort. But I did receive several e-cards this year, mainly from corporations and faceless businesses. All the other cards, e-cards I received, were from the sender personally. Listener, my Christmas card from Magnus Shaw was as follows. He sent an e-card to someone called Ashley and then blind copied me in as a secondary receiver. The sort of ultimate afterthought. I imagine this is what went through your head, Magnus Shaw. Oh, I must send a cost-free, lazy, idle jack e-card to my lovely friend Ashley. Oh, I know. I'll save even more effort by copying in that Terence Stackham bloke, the fellow from the podcast. Why should I expend any
digital loss? It was a hand-designed e-card.
You thought to yourself, I'll send this dull e-card to Ashley and simply copy Dackham in. Well, that's Christmas sorted in the Magnus Shaw house.
Well, what I did is just send it to my entire contact list. That's what I did.
So that's
hand-designed it and sent it to my contact list.
It's deplorable. I mean, not even did you hide the fact that you were sending it to this bloke called Ashley. We were just blind copied in. So, here's an after. Do you do the same trick to Mrs. the Magnus Shaw? You know, happy Christmas, dear. I sent your gift to a bloke called Ashley. Maybe he'll let you share it.
I didn't.
It's just a disgrace.
I did. Well, I'll remove you from my Christmas list.
That's not the answer.
You won't get one next year. No, I don't. I don't. I don't send paper cards. At all. But I do give us a modest sum to a charity.
You would let Tiny Tim freeze to death in Bob Cratchit's hovel. You're an unreformed Ebenezer Scrooge, that's what you are, Magnus. You're the Grinch who stole Christmas.
Yeah, but quite possibly. Quite possibly.
You're the bloke from CityLink who sacked all his staff on Christmas Day. You're Steerpike from Gormenghast. That's who you are. You're Cruella de Vil. You're Kurtz from Apocalypse Now.
Yes.
You're a very bad man indeed. Yeah. But, Magnus Shaw, here's a chance to redeem yourself.
Okay.
E-card boy.
Yes.
Yeah. What this is the Magnus Shaw quiz of 2014.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I've done the Guardian one.
That won't help you here. Okay. I'm going to give you seven names of people who hit the headlines in 2014. Out of the seven names, you need to score four to win the big prize. It's a box of proper Christmas cards for next year.
Okay.
There's seven names. Yes. You must identify why these people became well-known in 2014.
Okay.
And so the seven, you're going to give me four.
I want a book of stamps with them as well.
We'll see how when you score. If you score 5, I'll get you the book of stamps as well. Good. I'm only surprised you don't put out a listener appeal for unused stamps. Listeners, did you get any unused stamps on your Christmas cards? Steam them off and send them to me.
Yeah, please do, yeah.
I'm going to start with an easy one to begin with. I may give you a little bit of help as we go along here. Number one, Conchita Wurst. Or Conchita Wurst.
Yeah, that name is familiar. Conchita Wurst, yes.
Austrian.
Yeah, Conchita Wurst, yes.
You're Googling.
I promise you I'm not Googling.
Listen, we worried there.
No, I promise you I'm not Googling. No, come back to Conchita Wurst.
Okay, let me put a question mark there. I don't know if you can't get her. I don't think you can get many of these, but I may need to help you. Matt Taylor. Why was Matt Taylor famous in probably the latter half of 2014?
Matt Taylor. No, don't ring a bell at all.
This blew up when you were in America.
Oh, well, okay.
No, it was a worldwide story.
Matt Taylor.
It was for an item of clothing that he wore.
Was it? Was it the I Am a Feminist t-shirt?
No, very good. I'd forgotten. I'd forgotten that's what.
Yeah, obviously, it wasn't that then. No,
it wasn't that. No. But you're in the right apparel. It was the right that sort of clothing. It was a shirt.
It was a shirt. Oh right. Oh okay. Matt Taylor wore a shirt.
I will, if you didn't know this story at all because you were skittering around Miami and Florida, then. He was the Rosetta physicist who wore a controversial shirt.
Oh yeah, no, I actually only saw this on the review of the year. This,
yes, he I'll give you a score.
Wore like a Hawaiian shirt with pictures of semi-clad lady people on it.
Okay, well, yeah. Well I tell you what,
didn't know his name was Matt Taylor. I do recall this.
I will let you off that one because you were out of the country, so we'll kind of give that a kind of neutral.
Okay,
on that one. Okay. God, you're not.
No, I'm not. This is awful.
No. Okay. Human rights lawyer Amal Alamuddin.
Oh, well, she went on her holidays to Venice, and as part of her itinerary, just happened to marry movie star George Clooney.
Good. I put a big tick there. Well done. She did indeed marry Hollywood's most eligible bachelor. Yeah.
The longest wedding in human history.
Yes, indeed.
They seem to get married every day for about 6 days.
Every day. Now, this is a difficult one. I'm happy to give you a clue on this one. Dean Farley.
Dean Farley. Oh, dear. Not Charlie Farley.
He jogged into the headlines.
Oh, yes. Yes, okay. Yeah, I know these stories. I don't know these people by name.
I'm helping you.
He was on his morning run down a street I know very well in the centre of Leeds. When he careered into the Prime Minister and his party, leaving a conference hall, I think.
That's good. We're giving you two here because I've had to help you, but I think that's
pinned to the ground and thrown into the back of a police van.
Yes, only to be released later on the grounds that he was only just jogging on his way to the gym. Could happen to any of us.
There's a fine head of dreadlocks, I believe.
Yes, Jesse Helt. H-E-L-T. This is a homeless man from the USA.
Oh, yes. Jesse Helt, homeless man from the USA.
Yes, he did.
Did he give a lady his money so she could get home safely?
Oh, that's very good. That was a British story.
Yeah, I was just thinking that was a British story. Yes.
This is, again, a very, very difficult one. He was invited up on stage. I don't think I'm going to... I can't give you much more. I'm going to put a cross by this one. Jesse Helt was a homeless man from the United States. He was invited up on stage by Miley Cyrus when she won the MTV VMAs, and he accepted the award.
Oh, I didn't know that. No, I didn't know that story at all. No. The homeless man.
Yeah. No, this Jesse Helt, the story didn't have the happiest of endings because he was later jailed for 6 months after violating his probation.
Oh, Jiminy.
So you've got 2 out of 3 so far. We've score draw with Matt Taylor, the shirt man, coming back to Conchita Wurst. Pete It's either Freites or Freites, F-R-A-T-E-S. Now, I'm not expecting you to know this, but he's a former baseball player in America, but he inspired thousands of people around the world to do something this summer.
Oh, some kind of internet meme? Did he?
Yes.
This summer. So it wasn't the Harlem Shake.
It wasn't the Harlem Shake,
wasn't it?
Yeah, but you're kind of on the right lines. But this had more of a sort of goodly air to it.
Was it the Ice Bucket Challenge?
It was the Ice Bucket Challenge.
Did he start it? Okay,
He started it.
I didn't know who started it. Yeah.
3 out of 4. You only need one more, so I'm not going to give you any help with this one.
Right.
And I'm damn sure you won't get it. Gary Lewin was very famous for a very day or two in the summer.
Did he love Johnny Fruin?
Bang, bang. No, you're not going to get it, no. So I don't think we'll dilly or dally.
Okay.
He was the England football team's head physio. What happened was, he jumped up to celebrate Daniel Sturridge's goal against Italy in the World Cup.
Yes.
And in doing so, trod on a water bottle and dislocated his ankle and had to be stretchered from the pitch.
Position heal thyself.
Yeah, exactly.
A vague recollection of the story. Would never have known his name, no.
So I've got 2 crosses there. You've got 3 ticks. You need one more to win, Magnus Shaw. We've called Matt Taylor a score draw, so you can't have that. So it all depends on Conchita Wurst.
Conchita Wurst.
The Austrian.
Oh, Conchita Wurst. Now, I've seen this name pop up.
Context?
I don't know. It probably generated headlines about for better or worst, I would have thought.
Yes. Yeah, almost certainly did when she collected her trophy.
She collected her trophy.
Yeah.
Right. Oh.
When she collected her trophy on stage. On stage, yep. She collected her trophy. I so want you to have this big prize.
Yeah, you know, I'm not going to get this. Collected a trophy on stage for...
This is what she said.
Yes.
This night is dedicated to everyone who believes in a future of peace and freedom. That could be misleading. It's not the Nobel Peace.
Oh, well, no.
The listener is yelling. The listener is absolutely yelling at you about this drag act. Austrian.
Oh, was there she? Ah, yes, of course. She's the bearded transsexual singer who won Eurovision. Of course she is. Gold lamé dress and a full beard. Yes.
I'm feeling very generous. I have to.
No, of course it was. No, you're absolutely right to frown upon my lack of connection there, because I do know that. Yes.
Yeah. So I'm going to give you that 4 out of 7. You win the big prize.
Is she the second transsexual to win Eurovision, isn't she?
Oh, gosh, yes. Yeah. Gosh, who was the other?
Garner International
for Israel,
yes. There you go. Some bonus points if we were on QI. I might pick some points up there.
Yes. Well, that's very good, Ben. Yeah. Sure. So, yes,
no,
Conchita,
not really.
So,
that
Matt Taylor, Conchita, Gary Lewin, dislocated ankle, Pete Freites, the Ice Bucket Challenge, Dean Farley, the David Cameron jogger, Amal Alamuddin married George Clooney, and Jesse Helt, the homeless man with Miley Cyrus.
The Ice Bucket Challenge fellow, of course, former drummer for Echo and the Bunnymen.
Yes, Peter Francis. Yeah. Yes, that's right. Now, Magnus Shaw, that is you. Magnus Shaw, I want to read you a letter.
Oh, okay.
Published in the Times earlier this week. And, of course, the letters in the Times all start, Sir.
Yes, I think they put that on, don't they? However they've opened the letter, they replace it with Sir, don't they?
Yes, Sir. Yeah. Nigel Farage is your Briton of the Year. Why? He has offered nothing in 2014 but paranoia, prejudice and pessimism. Beautiful use of alliteration there.
Yes.
And his only contribution to the country seems to be keeping a lot of breweries in business. Your choice of Briton of the Year should not have been a single person, but a generic choice, the immigrant. These are the people UKIP sees only as benefit scroungers. Farage's party treats incomers in search of a better life like a farmer with a shotgun threatening trespassers on his land. The immigrant, however, is likely to be harder working, better educated, and even likely to speak better English than the British native. They are carers who look after the elderly, the hospital staff who work all days of the year. They are the Asian corner shop owners and the Chinese students. They are Malala Yousafzai and Mark Carney, Mo Farah and Bob Geldof. Their contribution to the nation is greater than anything Farage will ever achieve. Des Brown, Gosforth, Newcastle upon Tyne. This, of course, was Mr. Brown's reaction to the Times newspaper naming Nigel Farage as Britain of the Year. Do you support their choice, Magnus Shaw?
No, I support Mr. Brown there. I concur with everything that he's written there. I mean, what an absurd choice, and I would suspect a willfully controversialist choice as well. I just can't buy into this notion that in some way Nigel Farage has transformed British politics in anything other than a negative way, really. I think he slipped into the position that Nick Griffin would like to have achieved for himself had he not been somewhat less or somewhat more stupid than Nigel Farage, and with less sort of political nous than Nigel Farage. But Mr. Brown is absolutely right. I just can't really see what Nigel Farage has achieved except some kind of puzzling love affair with the BBC, and has ridden the back of unending media obsession with the man. So I can't really add much more to the letter.
I think what all ye moaners and groaners are missing is that the Times isn't endorsing the views of this ubiquitous Mr. Farage. They're noting his influence and what they call his game-changing, though you don't agree, role in politics. This is what the Times said. By any accounts, 2014 has been a stellar year for UKIP and its leader. After more than two decades on the fringes, the party has finally bulldozed its way into the political mainstream, led from the front by Mr. Farage.
Well, yeah, all those things may be true. That doesn't qualify him as Britain of the Year. He's probably done all those things, but that isn't sufficient to qualify you for Britain of the Year. And all those things that he has done have, from my point of view, had particularly negative outcomes. So just by sheer force of will and opportunism to shove your party to the forefront of public attention is totally insufficient to qualify you for something named Britain of the Year.
Of course, it remains to be seen how much this high profile of Mr. Farage will convert into actual seats in Parliament in 2015, general election in a few months. I mean, as the Liberal Democrats know only too well, coming a gallant second or third in individual constituencies counts for nothing, because of our voting system. Yeah. So on that principle, I think we can expect UKIP to gain maybe 12 seats if they hit the highest heights.
Yes, and that will be presented as some kind of revolution in British politics. That's the search for hyperbole is a long and hard one in the media. And if they did, I think it will be nearer six seats, but that will be presented to us as some kind of enormous sea change in British politics, which, of course, it won't be.
Well, they won't. They'll have no influence whatsoever.
No, so exactly that. And one really only has to observe Farage for a few minutes to realise that he's not the greatest living Briton by any stretch of the imagination. He's quite an annoying character who actually has less grasp on the nuances of the political process than his inverted commas success would seem to suggest. He's quite capable of landing himself in hot water on an almost daily basis. And really, all he's doing is taking enormous advantage of disenchantment with with more established political parties and people.
I think it, what his success does show, you know, his sort of Teflon-coated success, is the enormous level of disenchantment that people have with the two main parties, because they seem to be prepared to support or vote for UKIP almost no matter what, on the basis that they just want to have something else that isn't Nick Clegg.
Yes, and it's a shame that that something else isn't more imaginative or progressive. That's my big regret, is that that no party of genuine liberal and progressive change managed to slot itself into that position. But my instinct is to avoid naming anybody political as Britain of the Year, because just because of the nature of politics, so I'd probably preclude you from that title. If the Times wanted to be, you know, off-piste, left-field, wouldn't it have been more intriguing had they not selected somebody whose name we didn't previously know, who perhaps worked split shifts throughout the year at as supervising nurse on a cancer ward or something.
Or the bloke who jogged into David Cameron.
Well, yes, I think that was happenstance, really, on both accounts, really. But you know, somebody who had just...
Yeah, I know what you mean, yes.
You know, with no view to self-serving activity... had just got on with their job and done it extremely well. That would have been a more intriguing selection, I think.
I think that was the letter writer, Mr. Brown's kind of...
absolutely. I completely agree with what he says there. I just leave the question just who you would name as Britain of the Year, but I'm not sure we should really be naming anybody as Britain of the Year. And a lot of people in this country, a lot of them doing extraordinary things that we'll never know about. So picking out one seems to be a bit sensationalist and trite anyway.
I suppose so. You know, I've been thinking it's probably hard for you to imagine a state of happiness when you're holed up in your desolate, dingy Midlands town. of course, it's around this time when the calendar changes and people tell you they hope you have a happy new year. Happy new year, everybody. What is it, though, that actually makes us happy? Money? Health, love, One Direction, Kate Bush. Each year, the United Nations ranks hundreds of nations to find which country has the happiest people. And the UN says happiness is not only governed by socioeconomic frameworks, but also rooted in our DNA. And with bearing that in mind, the most miserable nations in the UN report included the United States of America, France, and... the United Kingdom. The happiest country in the world, Magnus Shaw, according to the United Nations, is Denmark. Everybody in Denmark is happier than you, Magnus Shaw. Why?
I believe that.
Why, oh, why are you so miserable?
Yes, you posed the question in a way I wasn't expecting, really, but...
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm not sure I'm particularly miserable, but I have always... admire the Scandinavian countries because they do have that sort of broad-minded, progressive theme running through their society, don't they? And they're just quite people-focused countries. I know they have, particularly Sweden, a very high tax rate, but also therefore a very high standard of living. They're quite expensive countries to live in, but that's because they... place so much importance on social structure. And I think it's unfortunate for them, perhaps, that they are quite so much to the northeast of the world, because they're quite cold countries as well, aren't they? And I always think, well, if Sweden or Denmark were positioned somewhere closer to the Bahamas, then they would probably be the best places on earth to live. I'm not sure I could face those winters, that's all. But,
I take your point. Just over a year ago, I was asked to chair a meeting which brought a delegation of Danes to London. They were looking at aspects of public services in the UK. Uh-huh. And they all seem to be very pleasant, intelligent, and bilingual people, of course. But they didn't appear to have serotonin, you know, flowing out through their ears, I have to say. But what I did, I talked to them quite a lot over this couple of days, and really impressed me was the amount of investment they make in education.
Yes.
From kindergarten right the way through, and the standard of schooling in Denmark, absolutely remarkably high. But as you say, they must have something going on, as all of the Scandinavian countries made the United Nations top 10.
Yeah, I can believe that, yeah. So I think they just place a higher priority on your contentment for the majority, as many people as content as possible. And if that costs a lot of money, then they're quite prepared to invest in that. I just think they see this, which after all, an abstract notion of happiness as something worth investing in. And I think other Western countries don't. They attach more happiness to economic success than just the pursuit of happiness in its own right. And I think that's where they win.
Yes, and influence on the world. I think we're obsessed here in the UK. You know, we still have somewhere in our DNA dreams of empire, and we still want to be major players on the world scene. You know, nothing pleases whatever the political hue of our prime minister, whoever it is. Nothing pleases them more than to be seen to be strolling out to that lectern outside the Oval Office. You know, with the then president of the United States, and you can see this sort of puffed up self-congratulation that comes across. But you know, I always feel in Scandinavia they're not bothered.
No, I agree.
You know, their political leaders aren't bothered by that sort of thing. Someone who agrees with what you've just said is the British author Helen Russell, who has lived in Denmark, and she agrees with you that it's all to do with a sense of calm and well-being. She said the Danish have a deep contentment with themselves and their lives, which creates solidarity and makes people more trusting of one another and less stressed.
Yes, I think that's absolutely true. But it's a cultural phenomenon, not a political phenomenon. So, even if we adopted the subtleties of the political systems in Scandinavia tomorrow, it wouldn't bring about the same the same mindset in the British population as it does there, because it's a cultural trope that needs you'd have to develop over millennia, I think, you know, within a people.
Well, there's nothing else for it. We all need to move to Denmark and make them miserable. We'll make them all miserable.
I think that wouldn't take millennia. That'd probably take about 48 hours, I should think.
I think
the Scandinavian countries have achieved something that we should all aspire to. If only they were a bit warmer, I think that would be the breaking point, really, is if they had year-round sunshine, they would probably be the best places on earth to live, I think.
One thing that didn't give me much cheer was the television schedules over the Christmas period. I couldn't find a great deal outside of Downton Abbey.
And that was stretching.
Have any appointment television. Mm. I don't know whether you were transfixed by any programs, but on the whole, do you look forward to television schedules in 2015 with much optimism?
No, do you know, I noticed a worrying trend in upcoming television or recently screened television. And I think we've been here before, and it's a shame to see us revisiting it. And that is a laziness in the creative process, because appears to be a real leaning towards the resurrection of old formats in the hope that they will catch light once again. You're always going to have the odd example of that, but it really does seem to ripple out now across all the channels, particularly the commercial channels. I'm just flicking through the schedules. I noticed that we have Stars in Their Eyes with Harry Hill. Coming back in the new year with great trumpet attached to it. We've already had this year Celebrity Squares has come back. I think we reviewed Celebrity Squares.
We did.
When it came back.
Yes.
It's still open all hours, I saw on over Christmas. Birds of a Feather has shifted from BBC One to ITV. But it's a resurrected format and is exactly the same and still as unfunny as it ever was. And even, you know, ITV's big announcement for certainly the early weeks of 2015 is that there's another series of Broadchurch. Well, you know, that's not really sticking your neck out too far to do another series of something that was successful in 2014. And so it goes on. And I think, you know, I think if you're paying your producers, especially your commissioning editors, a hefty sum to do their job, then to just keep reintroducing old formats in the hope that they will reignite is really, really lame. And I don't look forward to seeing any more resurrected formats.
But the broadcasting magnates and schedulers would say back to you, well, we're giving the public what they want, and they'll probably waive the viewing figures for Harry Hill's Stars in Their Eyes, which, you know, won't be troubling my TV, but we can probably anticipate it'll be in the top 10 most viewed programmes of that week.
Well, I mean, I would argue, how do you know this is what people want? I'd challenge the ITV mailroom to produce the sacks full of letters demanding the return of Stars in Their Eyes and Celebrity Squares. The point being that if you don't create, invent and screen new formats, then you can't... There's no way of saying that they aren't what people want or they are what people want. So if people will watch what is available to them. And, yeah, you resurrect Stars in Their Eyes and people will come back to it because they remember it from before and perhaps enjoyed it before. But that is what I'm saying is that is not adventurous. That's not creative enough.
It's I think it's based on fear by the commissioners. They fear for their own jobs. They've got mortgages and school fees to pay and whatever. And I think they fear for their own jobs, so they fall back on what they know rather than taking a chance on something progressive. Mm. So I would feel that your Chris Morris, for example, and Vic and Bob, as another example, wouldn't get near a television studio in 2015 if they were starting from scratch.
That's
now.
Exactly right. Yes, I think that's exactly my point. Is where is the risk? Where is the creative adventurousness? When Stars in Their Eyes was originally launched, I guess in the early 80s with Matthew Kelly. I'm not sure if there wasn't a season with Leslie Crowther, was there?
I'm not an expert on this one, but I do seem to remember Leslie Crowther and the smokers, dry ice. Perhaps when he passed away, maybe Matthew took over.
Yeah, I think that might be right. Albeit very populist, that was an original idea, and they took a chance on it. And it may have bombed, but it wasn't. It didn't. It was a success. But people were prepared to pitch and develop new formats in an interesting way, and it just speaks quite ill of the television industry that instead of that process continuing, that there's just been a fold back to these old shows.
Let me play the part of a ITV scheduler for a moment, Magnus Shaw. I'm going to say to you then, if I'm the ITV scheduler for the next 30 seconds, I'm going to say to you, that's all very well, Mr. E-Card Magnus Shaw, but the biggest risk that we took in 2014 was putting on a fellow called Dapper Laughs. And look what happened there. They took a risk there. Look what happened.
Well,
you want them to take risks, and this is the outcome.
Yes, I mean, creatively rigorous risks. You know, I'm not saying the best replacement for old formats is utter bilge. That's equally creatively bankrupt. But it's well thought out and creatively interesting television will suffer if the choices between Celebrity Squares or Family Fortunes and Dapper Laughs. Is that really what we're faced with? Because that doesn't fill me with excitement and joy, let me tell you. And I don't think they did take that much of a risk because they put him on late night ITV2, almost in the certain knowledge that it would be an appalling disaster.
And indeed, they were quite right. No, I'm not a great advocate for looking backwards. And on that theme, generally, I find those review of the year TV shows little more than an excuse to rerun some clips of disasters, general awfulness, and royal babies.
Yeah, and they go on, 3 hours, don't they?
Yes. So I wasn't expecting much from Charlie Brooker's 2014 Wipe, shown on BBC Two on Tuesday of this week. Were we in for a left-wing biased attack upon anything deemed Tory or establishment, and huge cheers for anything and everything that The Guardian supports? Would it be snarky comments about Mr. Cameron and smarmy shout-outs for your socialism? there was only one way. There was only one way to find out, and that was to watch Charlie Brooker's 2014 Wipe. Did he wipe the Midlands misery from your face, Magnus Shaw?
Yeah, I think there's a distinct possibility that Charlie Brooker has. As probably the only real satirist on mainstream television, certainly on the BBC in recent years. I mean, other than fairly tame shows like Have I Got News for You and such like. And I think that there's a possibility that he'd slipped back a little bit, and his formats and his scripts had become a little spongy in recent years. It was with some trepidation then that I approached 2014 Wipe, because I thought, well, yeah, perhaps this might be his last shot at actually being somebody with something cutting and incisive to say. And I was really pleased, because I think he pulled out all the stops on this. I thought it was tightly edited. The script was genuinely amusing. I thought the light and shade carried within it was well done and sincerely meant, and I thought he really nailed it this time, and it was as good as some of his early screen wipe shows that really brought him on to our attention, certainly on television. So I thought, yeah, he really nailed it this year. Of course, when you look at the credits at the end, he had a lot of help, a lot of writers and editors involved. But that's fine if you're producing something that is really sort of attention grabbing and insightful, and I thought he really did a good job with his review this year. It was the only one really worth watching.
I rather liked Diane Morgan. She played the part of a gormless viewer.
Yes.
Who makes a sort of cutting observations whilst appearing to completely...
Philomena Kunk, is it?
Yeah. Yes.
She's, I have to say, not a new character on the Brooker format.
No, I think I'd come across before. I'm not a regular viewer, but I thought I'd come across before. Yeah, see, she sort of completely misunderstands, doesn't she, the circumstances of, for example, 12 Years a Slave and the raid on Cliff Richard's apartment.
Yeah.
I was less taken by the use of stories like ISIS and the Malaysian airliner as a subject for humour. And I think Brooker himself was a bit awkward too about this, but seemed to feel that it was inevitable that they had to feature. I appreciate it's difficult to tiptoe around these subjects, but you know, there's just no laughs in terrorism, really, and I didn't think that particularly.
I don't know. I mean, if your brief is to satirise current affairs, then you're going to have to go up against some pretty dark subjects, and I mean, I think anybody who's seen Four Lions would disagree that there's no laughs in terrorism.
Well, you see, yeah, well, that's where we disagree, because I found that, you know, I really didn't even smirk during Four Lions. I thought it was abhorrent. So, you know, we've got very different views.
Very different,
but yeah. I think one of the issues when we come to Charlie Brooker is that you called him, he's often called a satirist. And, you know, now a satirical look at the news with Charlie Brooker. And I just think this isn't satire generally. It's sarcasm delivered from a left-leaning side of the political divide. There were some hit-home moments. I mean, again, that Diane Morgan as your Philomena character. You know, these days, America has changed and black people can be whatever they want to be as long as it's president or shot.
Or shot, yeah.
And you know that hit home.
I didn't find it particularly left biased, actually. I know there have been episodes of Wipe and other Charlie Brooker shows which I would have to concede came from the left, but I didn't feel this was particularly left-leaning at all.
Maybe that's because you sympathise with his political...
No, but even objectively. I can spot something that is, even when I agree with it, is biased towards what I agree with. And I thought this was pretty well balanced, I thought.
Well, you see, this ties in with what we were just saying. For me, this ties in with what we were just saying about new shows, new comedy, if you like, because it was hit and miss for me. Some bullseyes, but I thought this show could be more than just being horrible about people, which is what a lot of it was. And I'll give you an example. I'd like to see comedy rise above simply making remarks about Ed Miliband's appearance, and maybe hitting home to the extent that the viewer is asked to rethink their views. You know, it's very easy to rerun that bit of footage of Ed Miliband eating a bacon sandwich. You know, that's not satire.
No,
that's just being horrible.
I agree with that, and that's lazy as well. Hmm. It was lazy when it was fresh. Now that it's months old, it's particularly lazy to say that. Ed Miliband had a funny face while he was chewing. We've all got a funny face while we're chewing. I completely agree with that. Yes, yeah.
The closing segment of Charlie Brooker singing with the Blockheads on Reasons to be Fearful, I thought, you know, that possibly fulfilled one of his ambitions, but that was a rather sort of damp finish. Unless you're a big Charlie Brooker fan, you just think, oh, yeah, good for you, mate, you're singing with the Blockheads, you know.
Yeah, I thought that was a bit of a misfire, I grant you. I guess he wanted to do something unexpected. He's certainly not seen him singing with a band before on any of his shows. Reasons to be Fearful, was it? That they changed.
Reasons to be Fearful.
Yeah, that wasn't the highlight, I have to say. But he tried something different, and it was certainly more adventurous than a lot of the output over Christmas on the TV. But I think, on a whole, this was well written, well edited, and was leagues above any of the other 2014 reviews that were washing about. The BBC News Channel had a review of 2014's Weather, which you'd think was probably the dullest strand on a current affairs channel, was absolutely fascinating. I watched it for an hour. It was great. Yeah, simply because we have such extreme weather these days. I maybe 15 years ago, review of the weather, 2001 or to 2000 would have been a bit ho-hum. But when you look at the weather events that have befallen the British Isles in the last 12 months, it made for a fascinating review. I thought it was great.
Five Live did exactly the same. They dedicated an hour during this last week to a review of the weather during the year. I thought it was the dullest hour of the year. But the thing that struck me was I was listening to it. I think I was in the bath. And that's not particularly relevant, but it allowed me to concentrate. And I thought anybody tuning in would have been most disturbed because they were playing clips from weather reports from earlier in the year. And, of course, they were talking about massive flooding throughout the country. So if you had just turned on your radio bleary-eyed on, I think, probably Boxing Day or the day after, and you tuned in and saying, and reports coming in of massive flooding on the Thames Valley, you'd think, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God.
Yes.
Because you would have thought it was a live report.
That's true, yes. I have noticed that on various reviews of the year, especially on the radio. It seems to suffer from that. What they used to do was to make it very trebly, as if you were re-listening to it
from
a transistor radio, to make it clear this wasn't as it happens. But you're right, they didn't seem to do that. And that does muddy the water quite a bit, especially on the radio. But I might be the only person who enjoyed the BBC News Channel's weather review of the year, but I thought that was very interesting as well. And along with 2014 Wipe, probably the only ones you really needed to get involved in.
Yes, that's right. We were talking about Charlie Brooker's 2014 Wipe. It was on BBC Two on Tuesday at 10:00 p.m. When I've checked on the iPlayer, it says it's only available for a week. So if you do want to see it and you haven't, then you need to get your skates on.
Strange, isn't it?
Yeah. Charlie Brooker's 2014 Wipe. It was presented by Charlie Brooker and produced by Tom Corrigan.
Indeed. And, well, I'm afraid that's about all we have time for this week. First podcast of 2015. We're going back to the office now to continue our research into what exactly an Auld Lang Syne might be. We'll still have to nail that one. Let me just say thank you to The Athletic, Terence Duckham.
Be seeing you.
To our executive producer, Rona Martin. A happy new year to her. But most of all to you, our favourite listener. A very happy new year to you. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, there's much more over at therockingvicar.com, therockingvicar.com. But we'll see you in 7 days. Have a good week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to a podcast from the Rocking Vicar.
Thank you. You have been listening to a Dacca Media production.